Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Film Reviews. Isn't that a great title? And I have
yes.
Very creative.
Gets right to the point.
It's Film Reviews. And I'm here with my colleague about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's still in theaters today. And I actually just got a chance to see it again today.
Oh, my God.
Just
so that's the third time you've seen it? Or
yeah.
Is it more than three? Okay.
No, I mean, what I did was I tend not to – what the last few times I've seen it, I go in late because – I feel like the last part of the movie, if you just watch the movie, I feel like if you go in like an hour in, it's a better experience. But we'll talk about
that. I see.
Thing, so.
Well, that's something of a critique.
the thing is, you know, I think the Bruce, like, they could just start it off with the Bruce Lee scene and, like, you know. And go from there. But. Because it's weird. It's like every single time that I've kind of crashed the movie on late, I always come in right as that scene's about to start. Let's talk about this movie. Do you have anything background that you want to talk about?
No, I've seen all of Quentin Tarantino's films. Probably not all of the Kill Bills.
There's
but
only two.
Anyway, yeah, like, I don't think I made it through either of those. But, like, otherwise, I know his oeuvre, as we say, if that's background. Yep.
I mean, ultimately, like, he strikes me as a guy, like, as a kid. If he was a kid, right, he'd have all these action figures, and he'd have, like, these really weird ways. But ultimately, he's just smashing action figures together, you know? Like, that's his... That's what that kind of kid he is, you know?
Yeah.
And he wants,
I would
agree. He likes to take these characters and he thinks of them in his mind. I mean, I don't know who he originally thought he was going to play all these parts, but probably he already had these actors in his mind, DiCaprio and Pitt, and I don't know about Margot Robbie, but so apparently she wrote a letter to Tarantino saying, she really wanted to be in one of his movies, and he's like, hey, why don't you just be Sharon Tate? So this is probably like resurrected a resurgence, you know, of Sharon Tate, you know, also of Helter Skelter. I don't know. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, there was some movie called Charlie Says that just came out. I guess it's probably like the 50th anniversary of all things 1969.
Right.
So maybe that's why. I don't find Charlie to be that fascinating, but he has certainly been around a lot lately.
Well, when Tarantino, I thought he was going to really just do a movie about the murders.
Yeah, I did too.
I thought,
to be mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's in poor taste. You know, he likes to do this wish fulfillment stuff, but ultimately, I mean, my question
are
to
you
is...
Are
you
going to spoil the movie? Is it that kind of...
Yes, we're spoiling the movie
okay.
at this point.
Okay.
You better have seen it.
Yeah.
I'll write it on the description that it's a spoiler.
Yeah.
But it's... So, the twist ending, do you think he just wrote himself into a corner, or do you think that was always his plan?
I think... I think he only has so many arrows in his quiver. I think he's sort of bored with plot, and because this is very, very similar to his last two. Well, not his last two. But this is pretty similar to Django and Inglourious Basterds in terms of like, you know, sort of like a happy ending to something that did not have a happy ending in actual history. Though people do get butchered even in the happy endings. I don't think he wrote himself into a corner. I think he was like, you know what, I'm going to do the same thing again, but with this other story, and I can just make it about, it's not a bad idea to reuse.
Well, no, but can he do another movie like this and do
no,
the same bullshit
again?
No,
I don't think he can. I don't. Because, it would be like M. Night Shyamalan. Because, the audience would be way too ahead of the twist after this movie. I didn't know what the twist was, and so the twist was effective. I mean, I didn't see it coming. But I wasn't that
surprised.
And
heat to him is he does a great job of building up tension. There's that one scene where Brad Pitt is looking in on Bruce Dern's character, Vaughn. And he times everything perfectly so that when the TV is on some old-timey show where there's some drama going on, the exact music is now the scene, is the Brad Pitt scene of him going into the room. So it's like, so there's this
no,
like,
that's one of the best scenes in the movie, easily.
Right. And then he releases it by being nothing and then Bruce Dern, I think, is great. I think he's actually better than Burt Reynolds would have been. So
that would have been interesting. I mean, I would have liked to have seen both. I like Burt Reynolds.
You know, he hated apparently doing Boogie Nights. He thought it was the dumbest movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He wasn't very gracious about it. I don't know. I think Boogie Nights is. I liked it at the time. I won't get into Boogie Nights, but he's very good in it, though. He's a good actor. He was a good actor.
People compare the two directors a lot. So
yes, I think so.
And you could argue they're both Scorsese ripoffs, have you ever heard Scorsese say anything about Tarantino?
I don't know that I have, actually. It's a good question. I mean, I haven't looked for it, but I've seen other directors, like I've seen the Coen brothers talk about Tarantino, but no, not.
What have they said?
But they were gracious. I think it was like right after Pulp Fiction, and I remember Joel Coen saying it was great. So they both like thought Pulp Fiction was a really good movie. I don't know what their opinions were of other movies. But.
Clint Eastwood was talking about being at Cannes, I believe, and everybody was watching all these movies. You know, you got to watch like a ton of movies with a bunch of people, and you're like judging them. And he's like, dude, when Pulp Fiction came on, it's like that just blew everything out of the water. So even Clint Eastwood.
I remember seeing that for the first time. That movie was awesome. I mean, it was like, I don't know. I mean, that was a great movie in a way that perhaps this was not as great, but enjoyable.
Well, that's a lot of people are saying that, some people think Reservoir Dogs the best. Some people think Pulp Fiction. It was weird because I watched Pulp Fiction with somebody who had never seen it. What are they, millennials now? I don't know what they are, young people.
Yeah. A 38-year-old is a millennial.
Somebody in their late 20s that never saw it, right? So I was watching it, and it was a slow movie. You know, it was like, this is not such an action-packed movie.
Mm-mm.
And it's
got some flab.
Even that, which people think is a perfect thing. Now, this one is, it's totally self-indulgent. No one's going to tell him to cut anything. I mean, I bet you there's going to be like an even longer cut that we're going to see with all the other shit in it.
I was reading an interview with somebody else. With a stunt coordinator, and she was like, and there's this scene, it's not in the movie. So I think you're absolutely right. I think there'll be like a 4-hour version, which, if somebody wants to see it, they should see it.
I wouldn't mind it. I mean, I think like the idea is
you've invested 9 hours, count it.
You know, it's weird. I think I tend to gravitate. The way he shoots, like he puts you in the movie. I like Scorsese too. I like these directors who kind of immerse you in their movie. But I mean,
yeah,
it's weird.
In a kind of pop-up book kind of way, like in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, there are all those scenes where they're just driving around L.A. in a car, but it's like a lot of fun. You're like, woo, like I'm in the car.
Yeah.
But like a lot of directors would be like, well, I'm not going to just shoot a scene where people are like driving down the road, and nor should they. But for some reason, it kind of works with Tarantino.
Now, I noticed there's some great subtleties in this movie that people don't generally like. I just pick up when I was watching, you know, over and over again, I was like, wow, okay, there's these little expressions. Like, I remember when that director comes in to to the Tim Dalton.
Sam Wanamaker. Oh, Rick.
No, but what's his name?
Rick
the,
Dalton.
Nick Dalton.
See,
I'm
movie
the guy
three
watching.
Times in a week.
I was
like
I always
a hard
like,
name to remember. I remembered it.
Putting his face in ice, right? And the guy comes up. I don't know who, what director he's supposed to be, but
he's supposed to be Sam Wanamaker. He's like a real guy. And you'd totally know him if you saw him because he was also an actor. And he really is a lot like that. He looks like that guy, and that guy does like a pretty good impression of this person that not a lot of people remember or think about, but that's a real person called Sam Wanamaker.
Right, and he's doing this show called Lancer, which is apparently
a real show.
Yeah.
Yeah, not this episode, but yeah.
Right, and it's a weird episode. He's got this kid, and I remember when we got out of the movie, you were like, oh, that scene didn't work, so go ahead and say your piece
on
that scene.
It's totally celebrated, but I didn't think that scene worked. I thought it was a good idea for a scene where this 8-year-old child has an acting discussion and she's a very serious actress. I thought that was like a good idea, but then she's like way too precocious. And then he makes that weird joke about how one day she's going to be over the hill. And it just,
yeah.
I don't know. It just
that
sounds
actually got a big laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you want to laugh. You want to, like, enjoy yourself while you're watching that movie. I mean, and so you're like, well, that's a joke. I'll laugh at it. But it's not really that great a joke. It could be. That whole scene could have been, like, twice as funny if, like,
so
she were
how
a
would you
more
have written
low key. I would have had her say about half as much shit as she said. And then, like, he was, I thought Leonardo DiCaprio was really terrific for the whole movie. I thought he was really good in that scene. But she was just given too much dialogue because it was like, this person doesn't exist. And, like, if she didn't talk so much, she wouldn't have that thought. And then at the end of the scene, or the, like, second part of the scene, if I'm not rushing ahead, like, Rick Dalton gives this great performance where he sort of improvises, including throwing a little girl on the ground. I actually thought that was kind of funny. But then she says, that was the greatest acting I've seen in my life. And she should have just said, like, good work or something. Something an actor would say to another actor. Like, actors are never that generous. They would be like, that was solid or something. And that would have been funny to me. But, you know.
Well, but the whole thing was that her life was – 8 years is 8 years long. You know what I mean? Like, she's an 8-year-old. So
yeah.
In my life.
Yeah.
Like, how much acting can you even see?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess that's true, and I didn't think of that.
And so, but I think also just, like, he captures even someone who is just, like, a full-grown man, the littlest compliment can sometimes, like, just, you know, make your day. So,
yes.
It's amazing how people are so stingy with compliments, you know, when it doesn't cost them anything. I that made me reflect on that. But now I look at, like, his portrayal of this guy. He's supposed to be like a Burt Reynolds, Clint Eastwood, Steve McQueen kind of guy, right? I mean, like an amalgam. So Burt Reynolds, because Burt Reynolds actually had his own stuntman for a long time. So I was thinking this movie could use a prequel, right? Like of their Bounty Law days as stuntman and stunt double, because they have a long history. Could do a whole series.
If you could get those two leads, I'm sure you could sell it.
Otherwise, no.
It could be a series. It's not a bad idea, like a spinoff. Yeah, I would see that. I don't need to see teenagers get blowtorched every half hour. I mean, they could just hang out. That was the best part of the movie. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
But my point is that I like this pairing. Like, I wish they were more together in the movie. Like, to me, I thought it was going to be a buddy movie. It really didn't turn out to be that. They kind of presented it that way. Now, you look at, like, Sony, I think they were kind of lost. Like, they didn't really know how to sell this.
Well, if you remember, Inglourious Basterds, if you saw, like, before that movie came out, they show this trailer, and it makes it seem like this unit is going to be, like, what the story is. And, like, you see those guys all hang out together, like, twice. In like a three-hour
right.
movie, and it's about this other thing entirely, and I think he just kind of lost interest in that being like a movie about a bunch of army buddies, and I think perhaps similarly, he kind of got sidetracked with this buddy movie. Though I didn't think this was that far from a buddy movie.
No, it is, but they had very separate adventures. Now, did you notice how in the portrayal of what he was doing in his scene, what Brad Pitt was actually doing in real life? So that guy who's, I guess, is Johnny Madrid, he actually works for the Lancers, I don't know. But I couldn't really understand the dynamics of the show. Who is the good guy? Who's the,
yeah,
are the Lancers?
They all seem like bad guys.
Yeah. And this weird thing where the honor of the Old West, where the guy is just like, you know, slowly putting his horse on the, you know, pole, and then like coming and then facing the guy, the businessman, Gilbert or whatever, the guy whose restaurant it is, where this star of the Lancer show, Johnny Madrid, rolls up. That scene is completely, first of all, that scene of his horse coming in is paralleled by the scene of Tex's horse.
I see.
And then like the Lancer ranch gets taken over by the Caleb, who's played by Rick Dalton, and then it also gets taken over.
So Dalton Manson?
His character, yeah. Caleb is Manson, right. And he looks like him. He's got the mustache. I mean, he's got the long hair.
So
Brad Pitt is playing the part of the guy from...
Justified?
Yeah, Justified.
Timothy Oliphant.
So he's playing Timothy Oliphant in real life.
What does Timothy Oliphant do in that scene? I can't remember.
He's like, you know, Lancers, you're pushing, we're here, you've taken over a Lancer ranch, and Caleb is this outlaw who's just bullying this family called Lancer. Doesn't make any sense. But apparently, like, in this version, Lancer's just some family with an old man who's being represented by Luke Perry, who looks like he's a half cripple, and he ends up like, you know, he's not even alive anymore. So he was a frail dude, and it was like he wasn't going to be the hero. So this guy, Johnny Madrid, comes in, and you don't know whose side he's on. He's even intimating in the conversation in the scene that he's going to go over to Johnny Madrid's side. But ultimately, Johnny Madrid knows that this dude is actually a Lancer plant. So,
wow. That makes the movie much richer. I didn't think of any of this. And I should have, maybe, because it's like, why are we spending so much time on this dialogue? Wow, that's
right.
Really interesting.
So So the ranch, the Spawn Ranch, is the Lancer Ranch taken over, and Caleb is Manson, and he's holding the little girl, who's the representative of all these little these women that are basically being indoctrinated.
Oh,
by.
that even helps where she like laughs with him, because as we were talking about right after the movie, there's a weird moment where they laugh together like they're
right before he threatens her.
Yeah, and it's like, well, why is she laughing? But that makes much more sense if he's Charles Manson and she's suddenly sort of into him in
right
this creepy, creepy way.
Yeah. And then so, and the old man is, you know, that they refer to.
Of course.
Who's supposed to bring
yeah
the money, the $50,000, is Spawn.
Yeah.
Now, also, there's a... you know, this whole, the whole subplot of Sharon Tate and her relationship with Sebring and Polanski,
yes,
you know, they have a few scenes with the guy. And you look at Polanski and he just seems like kind of like a – I mean, the way he's portrayed in this movie, what would you say about him?
I mean, he was in it for like literally 25 seconds.
Yeah, like the same as Manson, like about the same amount as Manson.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't really get an... I mean, it was like they got an actor who looked vaguely like Polanski and was like a little guy, but that was about it.
And he was dressed up like an English, like a lord from like the 1800s or something with some ruffled-ass shirts and... I mean, he
yeah
was seriously dressed like he was in knickers or something. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think he was like very of that scene. I mean, yeah, I'm sure he probably did dress like that.
So Damian Lewis plays Steve McQueen, and he looks exactly like him. He's got the exact same facial structure.
He looks exactly like him, and he talks exactly like him. In some ways, that was my like favorite 40 seconds of the movie. Like, because Damian Lewis is a really good actor, so he's really impersonating Steve McQueen, who he happens to also look like crazy like. But it, just the way he like points and talks and like, it was amazing.
Yeah, he did a great job. He should do like a Steve McQueen movie or something, like play Steve McQueen, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, I could have watched it all day. I was like kind of pissed off. Like, oh, I think that's his only scene.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like these people are like, you think about it, it's such a double-edged sword. Like this guy who's playing Manson's like, I'm in the new Tarantino. I play Manson. And he's doing the Manson murders. Like, no, like you're going to be in it for a, you know, you're going to be on set for a day.
Yeah. There's an article about what you're talking about that I sort of prepared for our talking about this. But I read like about how Tarantino likes to, if you will, flex with casting. Like he gets whoever the hell he wants and I'll have them in the movie for like 15 seconds. And it's like, he's the honcho. And it's like, you're Damian Lewis, and you're hot shit, but you're only going to be in the movie for 15 seconds. And you're even Al Pacino. You're going to get, like, one scene.
Like, he tells Rick Dalton, you know, you're getting beat up by this guy, and you're getting beat up, and, like, the audience, they see the guy from Bounty Law getting sent out to pasture. And the thing is, his little lecture is really fucking up Rick Dalton.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about that scene. It's just like he's just a salesman. He wants the guy to go out and do spaghetti westerns.
Oh yeah,
so
you can tell he doesn't. It's just business to him. Like he doesn't.
Right. But it's not true. Like he could very well go on for years and years being a heavy in many many shows and do just fine. Looks like he can actually act too, to some extent.
Yeah. No. He fuses with Leonardo DiCaprio in that one scene. I mean, Rick Dalton really is very good in that one scene, at least.
I like also one of my favorite scenes too was the reminiscence that Brad Pitt has on the roof about why he's blacklisted.
Yeah.
And it was the whole Bruce Lee scene from. So, what did you think of that? You thought it was mean to Bruce Lee?
I liked the scene. I thought it was strangely mean to Bruce Lee. I think the legacy of Bruce Lee will outlive this movie, but it just seemed like a strange guy to, like, pick a fight with figuratively. Like, who doesn't like Bruce Lee? I mean, and apparently Quentin Tarantino doesn't. I mean, then it's like, okay, but you're kind of losing me because I like Bruce Lee, and I don't even care about this crap. But like, Bruce Lee seems like a cool guy to me.
Now he addressed this, and he said,
yeah.
"Look,
well, that
I love
doesn't
Bruce
make it bad." Well, yes, okay. What did he say? I'm sorry.
I love Bruce Lee. He was arrogant, and he was also he did say that he could destroy Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
So
he can do what he wants. I will say that. I'm not going to be like, how dare he? But he dared. and he's going to pay a little price. It just seemed kind of strange. But it's a good scene. It definitely is. If I didn't know who Bruce Lee was, I would have enjoyed it all the more.
He says, he's like, look, Brad Pitt can't beat up Bruce Lee. But this is a fictional character. This is Cliff Booth. And it's like, could Dracula beat Bruce Lee? It's the same question. It's like, if I write a character that can beat Bruce Lee, then this character can beat Bruce Lee, and that's who he is.
I didn't find that part offensive. I just thought, like, he was like such a jerk. It was like, I don't know. But it's a good scene, and I really don't care. But it's like, it just seemed like an odd choice. But you know, we're talking about it, so maybe it was a good choice.
I thought it was just a classic, kind of like exciting, you know, hand-to-hand combat.
And it was. I mean, it would have been unforgivable if Bruce Lee sucked at fighting. And it was like, wow, this guy's fighting Bruce Lee. That part was good.
Right, and he was kind of winning.
It was like, wow, yeah. Yeah, no, he was.
No,
yes,
funny
take
scene.
It back. It's a good scene, and Quentin Tarantino has balls for putting it in, and Bruce Lee will be fine, and the memory of him will be fine. So yeah, you talked me into it.
But also, the scene before it where Kurt Russell being begged by Rick Dalton to let him as you know on the stunt to be the stunt guy. He's like, "Fucker killed his wife, man," and that right there was like. Then they go into the scene where he's on the boat with actually Rebecca Gayheart.
Oh wow! I knew she was in the movie, and I didn't know that was her.
You see him in this really pitiful wetsuit on a boat, and we don't know what happened. Maybe the harpoon just went off while it was in his hand, and they hit a bump. You don't know, but they leave it open. So
I spoke to a woman who saw this movie, who professed to be very offended by that detail.
I can understand that. What I understand was what I thought was funny, though, a real funny moment in the Bruce Lee scene when it was like that dude comes up to him right when he's about to start fighting. And he's like, that guy's kind of famous. And like Bruce Lee's like, that guy, like, what are you talking about? And he's just like, yeah, he killed his wife and got away with it. And he's like, that guy. That was a great little moment.
It was a good moment. And Bruce Lee seems cool in that moment. like he looks a little scared and also like, what? I mean, yeah.
Right.
And he doesn't talk with a sort of Asian accent, which was another element of the Bruce Lee thing. Did you not think in your three viewings of it when Bruce Lee's giving his monologue that he sounded a little stereotypical?
Well,
perhaps nitpicky. I don't know. Like dropping R's and things. But you know, maybe that's accurate.
I see. You thought it was like Breakfast at Tiffany's, kind of?
Like, slightly. I mean, the actor was actually Asian, but just a little bit.
Right, yeah. I think you're right. I mean, there was a stylized quality to his performance, but I thought it still captured the Bruce Lee. I think he did a great job, Mike Mo.
Yeah.
And I could see him playing Bruce Lee in a like a full-on Bruce Lee movie. You know what I mean? I
feel for the guy, because he must be going around being like, yeah, I'm in the new Tarantino, I'm Bruce Lee. It's like, you son of a bitch. Like,
yeah.
I'm Bruce Lee in a Tarantino movie. Like, why is it an absolute good?
Yeah. But it was so it was there basically as just to show you that Cliff Booth can take care of himself. And within that, too, is his extreme agility in getting up to the roof. So this guy's basically the superhero. He's a superhero in this world of Tarantino. This, we found the dude who's like the most formidable. Now, they also say he's a war hero. So he must have been, I guess, fighting in the Korean War, I would imagine.
Yes, I would imagine as well.
And there's some who believe, I think, the sergeant in Inglourious Basterds, the guy Brad Pitt plays, is supposed to be his dad.
Okay. That
and
would make
Floyd,
sense. There's a family resemblance.
And Floyd from True Romance is supposed to be the son of Cliff Booth. I'm just like, this is like the
someone
Tarantino,
I guess someone
extended
online
universe.
Said it. Yeah.
Huh?
But that's just because the reasoning behind that is like, I mean, that makes it seem like Calvin Candy is the great grandfather of Rick Dalton, because they're both played by Tarantino, which maybe they are. Not Tarantino, DiCaprio, excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, apparently, I think the guy, the English guy with the three Glazer, gets shot in the basement bar. Fassbender. He's supposed to be the son of Tim Roth's character in The Hateful Eight. So, just weird connections there.
Yeah.
But so you have this Cliff Booth guy who seems like the ultimate like dude you want to be.
Yes.
There's something, I mean, he's very much a Western figure, you know, like almost like a strong, silent type, you know?
Yes.
Now, he has this scene with his dog where he's dog not to whine. What did you think of that? Do you think it was just extraneous?
I don't know. I thought it was... I mean, the dog is going to play a role later in the movie. It's a movie starring Brad Pitt as the coolest guy in the world. I actually appreciate a scene or two where he's just hanging out, you know, with his dog in a trailer having beer. I mean, that was like a very enjoyable scene, I thought.
Yeah, and I thought it was like there was a lot of messaging going on there. Just about the zen-like quality that because Rick Dalton is just like freaking out.
Yeah,
he
was very thin-skinned. He cried at the drop of a hat. Yeah, he was not stoic at all. He couldn't handle anything.
Yeah, and he has this guy who's just like going with the flow. Like he doesn't even think about his future or past. He just like moves on. And he seems perfectly
And when he
content.
Almost dies, he says, hey, it wasn't my time. Like, I mean, that's his philosophy. Like, all things were meant to be.
And he doesn't sweat at anything at all. And it just seems like Rick Dalton, on the other hand, is like every little thing is a fucking crisis. I mean, when that scene where he like makes he says the wrong lines and then he goes into his trailer and
improvised, I read.
Oh.
Yes, and Tarantino doesn't do that much, but just let DiCaprio just roll with it.
And
he was great.
Had...
One of the best scenes, another, you know, now that we're talking about it, another very good scene in the movie.
He's like, if you don't fucking get those lines right, I'm going to blow your goddamn head off.
Yeah. I just think that's
like,
improvised.
Yeah, like blood all over your pool. And then you look at his life, and he's just sitting there reciting his lines, floating in his nice... He owns the house, you know, he doesn't have to make any payments
on it. Oh, yeah,
it.
If he could just relax, he has
right.
a great life, as Cliff points out. Like, I don't really understand what you're so stressed out about.
You'll get to another country, they want you to go there, they want to give you money to come, and he ends up going anyway, and it's like a good experience for him.
I imagine it would be a good experience. I mean, like, Yeah, go to some other country and being treated like a god.
Right. But he just, like, looks at it like, you know, it was just at the beginning of the spaghetti western thing. But he captures it very well, you know, when he has, like, that little scene with Johnny Madrid and, like, those laughing guys, like, in the background, like, Johnny Madrid, and, like, you see, like, five different dudes laughing. It's just, he captures that, like, kind of movie very well. The way he kind of folds these guys into the time, very creative, I thought, too.
Yes. And I think it's probably, I mean, not that I really know what I'm talking about, but I'm Quentin Tarantino would. I imagine actors' egos are insanely fragile and they're never happy.
Right. And you look at Tarantino, I mean, he, in many ways, Rick Dalton is representative of him because he's aging out. Like,
yeah.
You know, you think about it, like, that stupid fucking Hobbs and Shaw movie, their opening, like, destroyed the opening of this movie. Like,
yeah.
Tarantino isn't the hot commodity that he was.
Well, to be fair, he was never, like, a total moneymaker. I mean, he always did well. But I do know what you mean, because, like, in seeing this movie, I felt like, and I worked with, like, college-age students, and none of them have seen it. None of them give a shit. Like,
exactly.
Like, oh, was that good?
Yeah, like, when we were in college, he was, like, the guy. And now guy, I don't know who it is for college people, but, like, it's almost like they don't even have a guy.
Yeah.
He's been passed by. It's... You know, now he's just kind of doing movies for buffs who like movies. It's a very niche. But, you know, I think this movie's doing better than expected.
It did.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah, it performed well. And he's already, I mean, like, his stuff, like, a lot of people aren't going to bother to see it because it's just, like, too much talking. It's
right.
Just, like, not enough action.
Yeah. It's very.
That's
it's
even
actually,
true of Reservoir Dogs. I mean, Reservoir Dogs is kind of action packed, but like this, I mean, you could do it as a play. There's like 45 minutes straight where they're just talking.
And it's like, can he do a movie without a fucking Mexican standoff? Like, so at the end here, basically has one with Brad Pitt holding up a hand pistol, which I thought was very creative.
It is.
And he's laughing. And you have him laughing and being... So they come, you know, you think they're coming to kill Sharon Tate, but they come in and...
That's the end of part one. Please check out part two where we continue this movie review. Thanks.